afternoon, Steve. W4DJW.
Hey, how you doing, big guy? You weathering the storm okay?
So far, so good. How about you?
Really ain't no virus gonna come after me. It just goes, and runs. Oh, me. No, we're doing fine over there. Since I'm semi-retired and I can pick the job I want to go on, I just come and go as I please.
Well, are you maintaining your distance between people, like 5 or 6 feet?
Before all this started, I used to do some woodworking, or I still do some woodworking. And I had 3 or 4 boxes of heavy mill nitrile gloves. And I also had some 3M higher quality masks so that I could spray varnishes and that type of thing. So if I go to if I know I'm going to a doctor's office, they think somebody from Star Trek's coming in. And if they don't like it, hey, that's fine. I go right back out the door.
Well, that's good. You're staying safe. That's what's important.
No, the mask is really for the infected so that they don't infect other people. But, you know, hey, a little bit extra protection never hurts. So, how's the thing with the repeater going? Did you get it linked up?
No, the next step is to get the... Well, we've got two things we were waiting on. One is to get the cellular network so that we can make adjustments from down here without having to run up to the mountain every time we want to make a minor tweak. And all that's ready to go up there and test it. We're just kind of hanging back. Well, I am hanging back a little bit from not wanting to get out too much while we've got the shelter-in-place thing in order. But we do need to go up there and hunt around for a cellular signal and find a good cellular signal so that we can get into it when we put it up there and make adjustments. So that's number one, is to find the antenna placement for that one. And then once we find it, we'll know how much power over Ethernet cable we have to build to get it to where it needs to be. And then the second thing is finding a better place and or better antenna for getting to Paris Mountain. Those are the two next things on the list, and they've been kind of hanging around for about 3 or 4 weeks now, maybe longer.
So how are you going to do that, a hotspot?
Well, that's what a lot of people call it, but it's really a router. It's called a MOFI router. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but it's a cellular modem plus a Wi-Fi plus a WAN and a LAN. It's got all of it on it. And it's got it so that you can put Yagis or parabolic dishes or whatever you need to put to get to wherever you need to be. A lot of people that go tour the United States in campers, a lot of those people use it. I've been looking online to see what they've done. And we've tried it with 3 different providers so far. Verizon looks pretty promising. AT&T didn't have a decent plan. I tried that Pure Talk, and I tried one other, and now we're on Verizon. So we've tried 4 of them until we came up with one that looks like it's going to work. It's going to be a little on the expensive side. We're still looking for ways to get the expense down, but technically it looks like it'll work.
Personally, with my travels, I've always found that Verizon's got the best or strongest signal, and, you can't beat them as far as signal strength. But you're right, they are not the cheapest guys in town.
Well, AT&T wanted, like, outrageous. I mean, I got it working with AT&T, and it had a decent signal. But their price was, like, $125 a month for... and that's even with having another line... But Verizon's is less than half of that. So Verizon's actually a lot better. Pure Talk was the best, but and the IMEI number was, I plugged in there the IMEI number for the MOFI router, which every device has its own unique number. And it checked it and said, yeah, you can use that with PureTalk. So I went and got it and set it all up, and it didn't work. And then I called them about it, and they said, oh, that doesn't work. And I said, well, it worked on your website. And they said, we know, but it doesn't work. So to save everybody a lot of time, they just told me to forget it. So that one didn't work. And I tried another one that they've got a store over in Greer. Let's see, what was the name of that? I can't remember it right offhand. But anyway, went to them. They had it, and they had a plan that would work for it, but nobody that worked there knew how to implement it. So I had to abandon that one. Both of those would have been cheaper than Verizon, and they appeared like they would work. But for one reason or another, neither one of them would work out.
Run $69.95 or between $50 and $75.
Yeah, it's 50-something. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's between $50 and $60. And that's for 5 gigabytes. And we've been measuring. We haven't been like sitting idle. We have been measuring how much bandwidth they use, and how much we need for what we want to do. How many times can we launch the dashboard? How long can we leave it up and running? How much of the 5 gigabytes that's available does that consume? Those kinds of things. So getting to understand, like, one of the things, I just tried out the MOFI router when I was on Verizon with my cell phone to see if I could connect to its Wi-Fi, and its Wi-Fi could get out through the Internet, and it could. I said, okay, that's good, but I better not leave that connected because that thing soaks up a lot of bandwidth. Came back in 2 or 3 days, and we had used like well over a gigabyte. And I thought, what's going on here? Well, it turns out the cell phone reconnected to it and started burning through its time. At cellular time, when it can use the internet, when the cell phone could have used the internet here, you know, all it wanted at no cost, no extra cost. So little things like that. Had to go into the MOFI router and figure out how to block everybody except for the repeater controller from being able to get to the internet. And then we had to build VPN tunnels for us to get back into it, because you can't go into a Verizon network from extra cellular network. They won't let you do that. But you can go out of one easy. I mean, that's the reason you bought it, so that you can go out. So built VPN tunnels that went out and connected to a jump server, and then we log into the jump server, and we can connect back in through the tunnel. So we get around their blocking us by building a VPN. So all of that has been being built in the background while we're waiting to find a good window to go to the mountain. Johnny wanted to go this morning. I told him, no, I'm sheltering in place, and he's telling me, you don't have to worry about it, and I understand that, but I've got there's other things we can be working on, you know, W4DJW.
K4VWA. Yeah, it sounds like a fun project, and you sound like you got a really good handle on it. Yeah, that's way over my head as far as, well, see, you have experience in networking and code and everything, where I don't, so there's no way I could do anything like that. So you're just not going out at all?
I'd say in the last 3 weeks I've been out twice, I think, two times. Once last weekend I went somewhere to get something, I forget what it was, and then before that it was a week, so that's like 15 work days that I haven't been out, and 2 weekend days that I've been out once each. So, but that's not really that, I mean, I got a 2017 Maxima that I bought new that's just barely got 10,000 miles on it. Right? It all during the week, I never go anywhere anyway. And usually I just go out on the weekend to pick up like a lunch or something like that, maybe once, maybe twice on a weekend. And then to take my car to get it serviced, I've taken it once, and now it's due again, those kinds of things. I took it on a trip one time to Fort Myers, which put a lot of its 10,000 miles that it's got on it right now on it, and took maybe 2 trips up to Beach Mountain. Other than that, I don't get out much.
So what does your wife do?
She's in HR for a business over in Spartanburg, and I've been telling her every week, you guys got to figure out how you're how you're not going to be going into work every day. I think she found out a way. I think she's going to be at home next week, for the better part of next week. She ordered a new chair. She had an office and for a long time and never used it. Finally just started getting rid of all the stuff that was in the office. And now this happened, and she's going to need an office again. So now she's starting to get that stuff back again. She had a chair come in this week. So she's getting ready to shelter in place as well, but she hasn't started yet.
Well, is it a manufacturing type thing? Have they sent their employees home?
No, it's a financial company, and I think they've sent a lot of them. But, you know, they had to do like everybody else. Like where I work, we had like four rounds of 7,000 laptops in each round that had to be shipped out to people that weren't working from home that can now work from home, because they've got laptops. But that was like 28, 32,000. It's a whole bunch of laptops that we had to get out in the field. And they had to beef up the VPN servers and the WebEx servers, Cisco WebEx, that's your online meeting tool. They had to beef all that stuff up. And we were going through highs and lows while they would add enough. And it would be really fast. Your VPN connection would just connect right up super fast. And then more and more of those 7,000 rounds of laptops would go out, and it would start coming back down again. And then they'd beef them up again, and they'd be fast again. So everybody's been going through all of that. And then our ISPs, Internet Service Providers, we've got a bunch of them, they're doing the same thing. They're having to beef up as well. So they would get slow, and then they'd pick back up again. Then they get slow, and they'd pick back up again. So I think everybody's going through that. They're doing the same thing. They're getting their people out of there and working from home.
Sounds like a real headache to me. But anyhow, you know, we do what we got to do, and just keep moving forward. Well, what's your prediction? How much longer?
The longer, the better, right? Because the hospital, like New York, is the poster child for not doing it soon enough, not stretching it out long enough. It needs to stretch out for a long time. But then the flip side of that is you don't want your economy going in the brink either. I don't know. It's a delicate balance. Anybody that wants to take it to the extreme on either end of the scale, getting back faster or stretching it out too long, You're balancing it between what the hospitals can handle and who can create the most quantities of ventilators. I saw this morning that MIT came out with $100 worth of material. You can build your own ventilator. Now, you wouldn't know how to use it, I don't think. Not like a qualified medical person, right? They would know how to use it. But it's a way for them to get around not being able to ramp up the ventilators fast enough. I think that's the key right there. Is if you can get enough ventilators out there, then you don't have to tell people, I'm sorry, you're going to drown in your own liquid in your own lungs. Right? I think that's the key to the whole thing, is getting ventilators out there.
Yep. Well, the only thing I have a problem with, a lot of these folks get on TV and try to be the experts and tell you just how long everything's going to last, how much equipment we're going to need, and some of them really don't have a clue, but yet they set themselves up as experts.
I think the experts don't even have a clue, right? I think everybody, it's all speculation, because who knows how long and how far it spread before everybody started catching on to it. But we find out, right? We watch that curve, right, or the data that can be reported. And watch for that curve starting to get to an inflection point where it starts to flatten. That's what I think we're looking for. And that and the curve on, you know, exceeding the hospital's capability to service people and having to turn them away, that curve keeps going up. And that curve on the hospital's capacity to service people flattens out. That's when we get into trouble. Everything above that flat spot is the outlook is either you're healthy enough to withstand it on your own, or like they're doing the MOOCs on, they buy a whole bunch of urns.
Well, has the news media said anything about New York City, the curve starting to flatten out?
Well, I was looking every day there for a while, but I haven't. been distracted with work because I had a bunch of stuff come up at work, and then I had a side project going that I just completed this morning. So I was just starting to get back to looking at that stuff for the past two or three days, though I've been pretty busy.
Now, your bank is international, and I wanted to ask you the other day, how in the world do you keep up with the regulations in all the different countries that your bank is in?
They have people hired to do that. I don't have to keep up with it. They send me information for regions, and we just implement what they're telling us. So we don't have to do all the work. We just have to do the implementation piece, the piece that makes sure that you're abiding by the rules. I worked for you've probably seen at a railroad stop, CSX, the railroad company. They were owned by Sealand before a Dutch company bought the Sealand part of it, and CSX branched it out on their own. I had the same thing with them, had to do global routes for them. It's the international company, and had to do global shipping routes. It's the same thing. It's amazing how much overlap there is, right? There were things called cabotage laws, which meant at some places you had to port at two docks before you could leave a country, or you had to port at some dock somewhere before you could port at another country, and then you had to avoid pirates on the high seas. Same kind of deal as with the banking, is that somebody else does all the research on the laws, and then what you do is you build an application that can allow each one of them to log in and build their own configuration, and then you just make sure that all that functionality works the way that they describe it. Those are called business units. The way those business units describe it, you just make sure it continues to function. And sometimes they'll add things saying, you don't have a rule that does this, and this law says that I have to do that. So we just go add the rule for them, and then they use it.
Wow. Well, sounds like fun, bud. Well, listen, I've destinated back here to the house. I've been over at W4NGU's playing with one of his antennas with my rig expert. You know, that thing is just downright fun. Some of the stuff you can do with that thing, it's pretty amazing. So anyhow, we got him tuned up pretty good, and he's going to be on FT8 pretty soon. Oh, hey, did I tell you I got on to FT8?
No, you did not. What are your? I know you're parked there and you want to get out, but what's your first impressions quickly, W4DJW?
Well, you know, I'm still raw and green in it, so, you know, I thought everybody stayed down around, you know, 10 to 40 watts. And then I found out, shoot, some of these guys are blowing it out at full 1,500 watts on FT8. You know, gee whiz. I'm still on the learning curve, but it's not as much fun as the voice interaction. I still enjoy that better. But the tactical end of it is the challenge, and I'm still on the learning curve, and I'm getting there real fast. And I've been hitting all kinds of countries. It's fun. Some of the software integration has been a real pain. You know, to get the N3FJP to talk to the 2SJXT, and one of the issues I ran into was making sure that my laptop was coordinated with the world clock. I had to download a program to synchronize my laptop to the world clock so that, you know, the clocking would be right. And, you know, the technical challenges, I'm loving it. You know, I'm just all up in it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're liking it. It's a lot of fun. And different strokes for different folks. I enjoy the digital side much more than the phone side. But like my sister taught me when I was a teenager, she said people like to do what they're good at, and they're good at what they like to do. That means sometimes you got to get out of your comfort zone and get into something different. Like for me, I should be talking on the radio more than doing digital so that I get good at it, so then I like it. But the more you do of what you do, the more you like what you do, and the less you like the counterparts for that. I think that's just human nature. Anyway, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Glad you're stepping a little bit outside of your comfort zone.
24 VWA. Yeah, well, you remember what I told you a little while back about keeping my mush challenged?
Absolutely. Amateur radio has got so many facets that it could fulfill your needs from now till the grave.
Yep. It certainly does. All right, well, listen, I've detonated. My son-in-law and my daughter are here at the house, and I'm going to go in and, he's not exactly my son-in-law yet. May 16th he will be, so I'm gonna go into the house, and I'm going to hold on to different segments of my body along with my wallet and see what the wedding's going to cost me now. So I hope we get to have the wedding May 16th. So anyway, listen, get out there and get you some sunshine. I'll talk to you later, bud. I always enjoy talking to you. W4DJW, KN4VWA. I'm clear after your final.
All right, Steve. Well, good luck with hanging onto that wallet. What is that thing about best made plans? Anyway, good talking to you. I enjoy it too. KN4VWA, W4DJW, clear and listening.
Star R Mobile.
I got KI4D. I didn't get the last two of the suffix. This is W4DJW.
The call is Kilo Foxtrot 4 Delta Romeo Romeo. Name here is Chris. I'm just passing through, heard y'all talking, and thought I'd throw a call out and see how long I can hold on to this repeater.
So, Chris, are you just passing through the area? You come here often, or you stay in or a little while, or are you just passing through?
Through this part of South Carolina. I live in Sumter. I'm a field service electrical engineer, and my job is considered essential because we build recycling and sanitation equipment. So I get the fun task of driving up to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and working on a machine they sold before everything got bad. Got to get this thing started up and in production so that the customer can continue to process the trash and recyclables.
Wow. Okay. Thank goodness for people like you, right, that you're around. And hopefully everybody that isn't essential will stay out of your way and give you a wide berth, let you be able to do what it is you need to do. But you're headed from Sumter to Fort Wayne, Indiana today?
Yeah, I've got to be there Monday. I told the boss that I would drive it straight through Sunday, and my wife vetoed that idea because she doesn't want me to exhaust myself on a 12-hour drive and then run the risk of getting ill. So the compromise was I would go ahead and rent the car, and I'll drive till I start to get tired or a reasonable time in the afternoon, and if I make it all the way, that's fine. If not, stop and get a hotel and then go the rest of the way tomorrow.
Well, it sounds like you've got a smart other half, right? Thank goodness for them. Keep an eye out for you. Yeah, you don't want to get so tired that you're vulnerable. Keep up your strength. You need it. You need all that you can get. So thank goodness for her. But I like to do it that same way, too. I don't like to make strict plans. Never have, right? If we can drive, go back and forth from here to Fort Myers, Florida, if we can drive straight through, okay. If we can't, we need to stop, we'll just do that. And whatever turns out, turns out.
Point, and, I couldn't argue. Wade says it's only 11 hours, so I knew I could do it in a day, but to her point, it might be a bit much, and right now with what's going on, the company has lifted the travel restrictions. Normally, they wouldn't want me to do the drive. Our corporate policy is within 8 hours or I want to say 400 miles. I forget what the distance is because usually you'll run out of time before you run out of miles on that policy. So I've never paid attention to that part of it. But, anything beyond an 8-hour, they they want you to hop an airplane. And they've kind of lifted that because nobody wants to get on an airplane. And I don't blame anybody because I don't want to either.
Well, I would think there would be, I think we're going to come out of this with a lot of learning, right? We're going to learn a lot. And that's one of them. I used to prefer that too. After 9/11, I never liked flying anymore. And if I had to go down to like Jacksonville, Florida, I'd drive. If I had to go up to Richmond, Virginia, I'd drive. If I had to go to the other side of the country, I'd fly. That'd be the only reason. One of the companies I worked for had a private jet, and I used to go up to Akron every day, and that was okay. Because you just drive up to the parking lot, you walk out, you get up there, wait for the captain to show up, you get on the plane, you leave. And that's all there was to it. So that was getting spoiled. After 9/11, the security is just out of control with commercial flights. I just don't like it at all for that. But so I don't blame you. And it's a good thing for them. They've relaxed the rules, or they'd have they probably have a mutiny on their hand. W4DJW. Was there somebody else in there? You still out there, Chris?
Yeah, I'm here. I thought I heard another station. I was trying to give them a chance to break in, but I don't know. Maybe not.
So with a KF4, call, you've been a ham for quite a while, huh?
Do a little math, but yeah, probably 25 years or so. I was first licensed in the middle of summer of 95, so yeah, that's right at 25 years, isn't it? This is 2020.
Time passes faster than you know. I got mine in 2004, so about 10 years after you did, or around about then. So what facets of amateur radio are you into?
I do a little bit of everything, and I'm always looking for the next new challenge. It's been 20 years since I've been on 6 meters. I'm kind of itching to get another rig that's 6 meter capable and set a quad up again, which I can't do in the current house. But on the HF side, I run the weak signal modes, some ready, do single sideband. Try and fail at CW. My code is pitiful, to put it lightly. On VHF, I still run packet and APRS, and of course FM repeaters. I don't have an all mode rig. I want to do some single sideband, some weak signal work on VHF and UHF.
I was just looking at your website with that, with those red, it looks like PSK Reporter, spots with 5 watts QRP. Is that 20 and 40 meters? I thought 20 was orange and 40 was blue, but it looks like you're doing it in like 6 meters or something like that, 10 meters or 6 meters?
Actually, that is a QSO map. I forget which website I used, but I took the log from a park activation and fed it through one of the QSO mapper websites, and then took a screenshot of the map it generated. What's in the blog there is accurate, and that was 5 watts from, where was I on that one? I think I was in Tennessee on that one.
W4DJW is syncing up with the repeater. And those are phone or digital QSOs?
Phone, KF4DRR. Yeah, I typically work phone, portable, when working the parks. Like I say, I try and fail at code occasionally. Hey, it's sad. 25 years, you'd think I'd be better at it, but I'm not. So, you know, I keep plugging away and I keep trying, and you know, eventually it'll get there. I just struggle with languages, so that front has always been a real struggle for me.
Well, that's impressive. 5 watts on phone and all those locations that you've got. That's pretty good. Yeah, I've done the same with CW. I got up to 18 on a bad day, about 22 to 24 on a best day with CW. But that's only while using it. And then you stop using it for a little while. It's kind of like math. If you don't use it, you lose it. You just got to be consistent with it, or it starts getting rusty. Anyway, I think we all go through that, except for those DXers that really, really love chasing DX. I think they stay on top of it pretty good.
Well, 5 words per minute was a real struggle, and I never did successfully pass that test. That was what stopped me. I got confident and felt good, and I went into a test session at one point and sat down and took general and advanced written, passed them both, and then completely bombed the code and was stuck as a technician. So that was a little insulting, but, you know, it was what it was at the time.
Well, that was intimidating. when I got my license, you had to pass the code too, but it was just copy. You didn't have to send. And I remember while I was copying the code during the test, my arm started jumping up and down on the table, and I had to take my other hand and hold my arm down on the table while I copied the letters. That's how nervous I was. But anyway, I passed it. But it was not easy. I don't know why. Normally, I study enough to where it's not an issue. And I studied code for a long time. I went through many, many of those yellow binders that have those pads that have the yellow paper on it. They're the really long ones. Just copying code, copying code, copying code. And so I felt really good about being able to do it. But when I got into there in that test, and I started writing it down, my hand started jumping up and down on the table. That's how bad I was shaking.
I think that's kind of what happened to me, was my own head nervousness got away because languages are such a struggle for me. But I felt confident. I had been practicing and copying 13 words a minute, and you know, I can do this. I'm going to go straight to advanced, and you know, I aced both of those tests. And then, like I said, I bombed the code. I went back and tried it one more time, and you know, just kind of relinquished myself to, okay, it's a VHF world. Because at the same time, I was having little kids, and life was starting to get in the way. Anyways, and it did for a while, and the wife come up to me a few years ago and said you ought to set your station back up. And well, when I started checking into it, I discovered code had been dropped, and I went, well, okay, here's my opportunity.
Well, that's good that she encouraged you to do that. I had something else I was going to... Oh, how is the amateur radio popularity down in Sumter? Are there a lot of hams down in that area?
I've been to a club meeting, but I've met a few in town that have seen the call tag on the back of the truck and, you know, would stop and say something. And I've seen some around. I would say it's probably as popular as most anywhere else in the country, where I have lived. It's, you know, not super dense, but it's not sparse. I know when I'm working FT8, I will see just absolutely huge signals on my waterfall, and I've traced that back to a couple of operators that I've not had the opportunity to talk to that are that are close enough that they're pounding me with ground wave. So they are really huge on the water ball.
Yeah, you get that kind of thing sometimes. It's like if they were doing like what Steve said a few minutes ago, if they're running 1,500 watts, that's and they're not too far from you, that's probably the only signal you see during that two-minute segment.
A few of them. And, when I started in FD8, I had a similar misconception that everybody was running low power. And, when I made the same realization he did, it was like, well, duh, it is weak signal. It's, you know, it doesn't say anything about QRP. So, yeah, it's what's insulting is when you got that rare one that you've been chasing for a while and you're seeing him and he's, you know, coming in minus 5, minus 12, and you crank it up to a full 100 and try to work him and still can't get him. And then figure out he's running that kind of power, and it's like, well, yeah, I stand no chance.
Well, there's more fish in the sea. Or there's another day or something like that when propagation is in your favor, like when gray line is over both of you at the same time, if possible. All kinds of things could happen, right? If it gets back like it was back when you could hit Europe on 5 watts on 10 meters, maybe you'll pick them up on a day like that.
I can always wait for that. It's, you know, it's been 25 years. I ain't worked that country yet, you know. it'll come along. But, that mode is kind of a strange bird. It is a bit of a technical challenge. I get tickled watching some of the Facebook groups and people ask about it. Start getting told they got to buy all this all this fancy stuff. What is it called? The audio interfaces that they hook in, and I just sit there and I look down at my old 80s model ICOM, the 730, that doesn't have a signal link. That's the word I'm looking for. And it sits there and clicks away, running all of the digital modes, including slow scan, with no issues.
Yeah, I think I use mostly SDR radios, like the little soft rocks or the ANN, the Hermes radios, those little ones, and you can, I do weak signals all the time, like 2 watts is high power for me. Well, really, when I go to super high power, I'm on 20 watts. I use a little what's called a penny whistle amplifier that came from the Tapers website. But most of the time, it's 2 watts or less and make contacts all over the globe with that all the time. And it runs 24/7, running whisper. I used to have a bunch of spotters where I'd run multiple slices off of SDR radios and just spot people all over the world. But that meant I never could transmit because the adapter that spreads the signal out to everything, it had a very, very sensitive preamp on it. And if you transmitted anywhere in its local vicinity, you would break it. I broke one of them, wrote the author, and he sent me like 5 or 6 of those preamps because he knew I would be breaking them. But I've only used one so far since I broke the one. But that was kind of fun. Ran that for several years, multiple slices. So I was listening about every mode on every band for a couple of years. And then I finally took all that down. That was just too much work keeping up with W4DJW.
RR. Yeah, I had never ventured into anything like that. I run the old ICOM 730 and use it for phone and digital. There at the house, it does 80 through 10 at 100 watts peak envelope power is what it's rated to do. And the old MFJ tuner will report that it does 100 watts on CW. So. I'm I'm comfortable that the finals are still in good shape after all these years. And, anyways, it's been a workhorse. I've run that thing a long time, and the guy that had it before me worked it hard, too. He was a contester.
Well, ICOM does make good radios, right? Sometimes they're a little more expensive, but you get what you pay for. I've only got one. I've got ICOM 7000, and it's the backup to a 2000 that TS 2000 Kenwood that I use, and it never gets much of an opportunity to get used because the Kenwood TS 2000, just like it, is very dependable. But enjoy those for like VHF and sometimes HF, but I like the ease of hooking everything up with, like you were talking about, those audio interfaces. When you're using a software-defined radio, there's no physical hardware. There's no wires or anything like that. Everything just connects through a program. One program talks to another program, and you don't have any wires. It makes it a lot easier that way. You get spoiled, though, and then when you got to go back and figure out one for a physical hardware interface, you got to do a little bit of thinking about it to figure it out. Your signal has picked up since you first came on. You must have been further away from the repeater. You're getting closer now, and then as you continue to go on, you'll start getting further away from it. But your signal's solid into the repeater now. It was breaking up a little bit there in the beginning, but not now.
Similar on the receive. I'm not really sure where this thing is located at, but I was noticing that on the receive, and I thought I heard some CW, KF4DRR. For me, it was really simple, and this is what tickles me when I see it posted on Facebook, you know, oh, you have to buy a signal link, and it's going to cost you, I don't know what they sell for, $150 or whatever, and I just kind of look over at my rig and smirk because, you know, I think it was a $2 audio isolation transformer and a capacitor, it separated the audio that way, going into my mixer board, which all of my radios pipe into, so that it's, you know, the one audio amplifier and one set of speakers, no matter which rig I'm using. And, that isolation transformer separates the computer from the mixer. And then there's another one in the same box that separates the out of the mixer from the input of the radio, and that's it. You know, I think I've got maybe $15, including the box it's mounted in the whole system.
And the beauty of that is you can find all that information on YouTube, right? If you just plug in what you're looking for, people have demonstrated it over and over and over again. This is how you do it. So with just a tad bit of research, not much. It doesn't take a whole lot of sweat to find a solution that'll work for your radio. But the signal link is kind of nice to have. I've got a couple of them. I don't use them much anymore. I used one on a Yaesu for Apers and left it running all the time. had a J-pole in the attic it was mounted to. And then and this repeater, by the way, is located on top of Caesar's Head Mountain. That's at the North Carolina-South Carolina state line at Highway 276, and it's just a couple miles this side of North Carolina at 3,500 feet. So that gives you an idea of where it is and how high it is. But the signal link was good when we had a digipeater up there at that same site, and then it went down because the guy went silent key, and then somebody else brought it back up again. But I haven't set that back up. But the signal link's handy for not having to think it through. But if you go on YouTube and you do a little bit of research, you can find out for a handful of parts. And like you said, less than $15, you can put together your own interface. There's a guy down near Charleston that was selling kits like that that were really cheap. I picked up a few of his kits. I still got one that I haven't built, and I've got another one that I did build. Works just as good. And it's got a couple of isolation transformers on it, one for send and one for receive. and it works fantastic. But he got out of the business. He quit producing them. I was recommending people just to go pick that up and build it and put it to work, and it works really, really nice. I forget what they call Easy something, Easy Key or Easy Link or something like that. But he quit making them. He was selling them at Hamfest too. It was down around your area.
I saw that online and saw they were no longer being sold. Because I would have went that route instead of building my own. What I didn't bother with was the Vox circuit. I just, if I'm going to go into a digital mode, I just unmute that channel coming from the computer and then throw the radio in Vox and let the Vox circuit in the radio handle it, which works okay. It's probably not as ideal as a dedicated, more sensitive Vox, but, you know, it gets the job done, and it works, so I'll keep rocking it. But yeah, what makes me giggle so much about the Signal Link, and I'm sure it's a nice piece of equipment, is the same guys that tell them they have to have that in order to work digital, will be responding to someone, you know, saying they're on a budget or complaining about how expensive all the equipment is. So, you know, it's like, if you want to save yourself a little bit of money, do some learning and do some experimenting and, you know, learn how to build some of this stuff yourself. You know, the components are not that expensive. The biggest trick is learning how to do it.
And it is very rewarding after you've done that, and it actually works. That's why I've ordered soft rock kits and built those, put those together. And they're not that expensive. You can get, we used to be able to get a soft rock 40 for around 20 to 30 bucks. And it has all the parts you need, and you can put it together, and it's a receive only. And then you can get one that transmits on 3 HF bands for 100 bucks. And those things work really good too, amazing. And it's very rewarding after you get them put together and they actually work. Sometimes you have to do a little bit of troubleshooting. You might have put a diode in backwards or something like that. But most of the time it's pretty straightforward. The guy that builds those kits, he'll assemble one of them in like 3 or 4 hours, and he calls it playing. I built it in 4 hours and it was playing. You know, I started at 6 and it was playing by 10 or something like that.
Yeah, I wish Heathkit and some of the others, Tentec was another one, was still around, because I enjoyed doing stuff like that. You know, I know there's still some kits out there, but there doesn't seem to be as wide of a variety of kits as there was in the past that you could pick up, build yourself and put on the air and learn something and then have that sense of accomplishment and that sense of pride of, you know, now I'm working a radio that I built. Granted, someone else designed it, but I took their design and all the parts and I put this together and now I'm using it to talk to you. And I kind of miss that.
Well, one of the things, W4DJW, one of the things I learned after building the Soft Rocks and the Genesis radios was that I really wasn't learning what I built them to learn. I built them because I wanted, really, I fly RC airplanes more, or that's my true passion, is flying RC. And they've got the radio control. And I was always curious about how can I control that elevator so sensitively, and the rudder and the ailerons and the throttle, and how can it be so accurate like that when I'm flying? Because I flew in competition. I always wanted to know that. My dad was an amateur radio operator, and I was using a radio, and I said, one day I'm going to become an amateur radio operator so that I can understand exactly how this thing is controlling this airplane so precisely in the air. And that's one of the reasons I started building kits, is to be able to understand exactly how that works. And what I found out when I got to the end of building a whole bunch of soft rocks and a couple of Genesis radios and one Hermes radio is that I didn't learn anything. I mean, I learned a little bit, you know, I know Ohm's law and stuff like that. But I really didn't learn how the circuits are working with each other and to make a radio. And that's because what I accomplished by building those radios was the ability to follow instructions. Right? That's all I proved, is that I could follow instructions and I could get it working. I still didn't know anything about radio front-end design or transmitting a signal or how all that stuff was working. So I guess that's the next step. That's one of the reasons amateur radio is so good. It can go as deep as you can go. W4DJW.
KF4DRR. Yeah, that is one of the good things. And my kit building experience was kind of similar. When the kit went well and I followed directions well, you know, aside from maybe honing techniques of soldering and, you know, mounting the pieces and whatever, I really didn't learn a whole lot. Where I learned the most was when I made a mistake and I had to go back through and diagnose and, you know, break the oscilloscope out and, you know, figure out what went wrong. That was when I learned the most about what was going on. Was not when it went well, but when I messed up and then had to go find where my mess up was.
Well, I couldn't agree with that more. That's one of the guys that used to be on this repeater a lot. He's still around every now and then. You can hear him on his call is K4SUG Ray, and a lot of people use him to help figure out things. And one of the things that he did to benefit other people was he'd ask them questions that would make them go do the research to get the answer. Like, what does your schematic say about that, right? What's this section of the schematic say that it should be? Instead of just giving them the answer, because you give somebody the answer, you're really not helping them out. But you point them in the right direction where they can put it together themselves and figure it out. That's where the deep learning happens. And unfortunately, I haven't done enough of that. And the problem there is the need for instant gratification. I want to see it work. And then once I want to see it work, I'm on to the next piece of candy in the candy store instead of studying that one in more depth and more detail. But I guess that's just human nature. We're all human.
Yeah, I have lost the repeater. KF4DRR.
Did I lose you? I'm hearing you. I don't know if you're hearing me or not. KF4DRR, W4DJW. You still there, Chris? Okay, not sure if you're hearing me or not, but I did hear you when you were checking to see if you still had the repeater. I could hear you, but I don't think you're hearing me. Anyway, if not, Chris, have a good trip. Be careful. Enjoyed the QSO on this end. KF4DRR, W4DJW. I'll be clear.
Now or not, I kind of went down into a little dip and started losing receive on the repeater, so... About 45 miles from Asheville now,
KF4DRR. Okay, you might be getting in the mountains and not able to copy. I did double with you a little bit for that one. So if you can still hear me, I mean, we're probably going to lose each other here in just a little bit. Anyway, Chris, enjoyed the QSO. You have a safe trip. Don't push it too hard. KF4DRR, I enjoyed it. W4DJW.
Q4DJW, W4DJW. This is KM4QYI.
KN4QYI, W4DJW. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Milton Fountain Inn. My son gave me a new mobile unit, and I was in the process in the ham shack of programming stations in, and I wanted to get a signal check from you.
Well, Milton, you're 100% into the repeater. It sounds you're rock solid. And you must be in a good location. You're not in the shadow because it sounds good.
Jack, I've got it hooked up to the mag mount that's going on the car, and just checking for a signal check. I appreciate that. I probably could kick back the wattage on this thing. It's a Yaesu 3100, and he gave me to me as a present. We're like three generations of hams. I heard you mention that your dad was a ham. My dad was, and my son is, so we've had three generations. Go ahead.